Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's Trad Tasman Talk. It is 7 p.m. here in COVID-clustered lockdown Melbourne. We are starting an hour later than scheduled, but what is time here in Melbourne? You're not allowed to go anywhere. A lot of people don't have jobs to go to, so...
Exactly. I'm sure it must just be quite bizarre to be in the situation again. But it is 9 p.m. here in Auckland, and I am mostly the reason for the delay here. I had some sort of last minute things come up, and then things not come up, and Aiden was going to not be here, and then she was going to be here, and so. The show nearly didn't happen, but it all came together in the end. So,
Savage Nobles and Merry Peasants has said your mic sounds shit, and I agree, because when you turned your mic on just then, there was this huge hiss, and I was just like, "What the hell is that?"
Okay, I will check my microphone settings, and hopefully.
We're easily irritated, us Melburnians, at the moment. If something slightly goes wrong now, it's easy for our day, easy for our day, night, whatever, to be ruined. You're late because you've actually, in New Zealand, got your lives back.
That's right. I'm too busy doing things.
I'm not envious or jealous. I'm happy for you. And this is... I think one of the, disappointing reactions to the Melbourne lockdown is just that, the rest of Australia and the world should suffer with us, that really sort of negative mindset, which I don't think is a good human thought to have.
No, that's certainly not the right way to look at it, and... it is. Oh, people are saying my sound is better. Well, I'll take that as a win and just stop touching the buttons.
Yeah, it's better for me now.
Good. I see. Amy is taking responsibility for the children touching the microphone. It may have actually been, I think it was the cable, so it's probably not them, probably just me moving it around. So no problem. Nobody needs to take blame but myself for that one.
Those are you call COVID-free problems. It's no longer first world problems. It's COVID-free problems.
Exactly. So, how has the first week into lockdown been? You have not left your house for anything but work or essential shopping?
The four reasons, which is, to get essential food or medicine, sport and recreation, work or study, caregiving or providing care. My Wednesday night Wilmsfront episode, which Sydney-sider Joel Jamal was my guest, actually went through the Victorian Stage 3 restrictions because it is less draconian than it was last time. For example, recreation such as golf, fishing, horse riding, lawn bowls, outdoor personal training is allowed. Also surfing, going to the beach, provided that it's only with one other person and you're socially distanced. So it seems second time around there's a bit more sanity in and better targeting of the lockdown measures, which made no difference last time other than to just show that you were strict.
Mm-hmm. And it is, I suppose, frustrating to be back in the whole sort of flatten the curve business. That's not really about flattening the curve. The supposed second wave, it's not a second wave. The absolute inability to take responsibility for your own actions. You're essentially just forced to be in the same situation as everybody, and you've got very little flexibility in what you consider an acceptable risk and what is not.
Even though we've been in the greater Melbourne Metro plus Mitchell Shire in Stage 3 lockdown house arrest for a week, and the northwestern suburbs, they got locked down a week beforehand. The curve is still continuing to rise. We had over 300 new cases in Victoria yesterday, and over 400 were announced today. And it's actually, there's a bit of role reversal going on now. Dan Andrews and the Chief Health Officer, Brett Sutton, they have preemptively said, yeah, we expect it to get worse until it gets better, until the effects of the lockdown kick in, because of course the virus has a 2-week cycle. Mm-hmm. And it's the media who's really basically campaigning for to have a stage 4 lockdown, which the Andrews government, they don't even know what it is yet. And Andrews and Sutton have said, we don't know what stage 4 would look like, because mm-hmm. we need to know what to restrict, which is the actual right way to go. You don't just want to restrict and ban things just so it looks like it's stage 4.
That's the way we went in New Zealand. It worked. we have a giant moat around the country, which was perhaps almost accidentally used to our advantage. And you know, but it doesn't work anywhere. It doesn't work anywhere else as long as you've got people traveling in and out all the time. And you know, it's a situation now where we're trapped in border limbo, and you can't open. You know, there's debates of, okay, maybe there's a travel bubble coming with South Australia, West Australia, and obviously, you know, the entire state of Victoria is locked out, and then from within that you've got Melbourne probably locked out from Greater Victoria, and then certain parts of Melbourne locked out from others.
Yep, Victoria, as I said last week, Victoria is cut off from, well, not just the rest of Australia, but also rest of the world as well. No international arrivals are coming in now, basically because of the flaws and bungles and bonking in Melbourne's hotel quarantine. There is a independent judicial inquiry, which is going to be starting on Monday, July the 20th. A lot of people have mistakenly said, oh, it doesn't wrap up until September. That's when, obviously, they're going to have, it starts in July and then finishes in September. To say it doesn't start, they're sort of implying it starts in September, which is not the case at all. Because obviously, if you're having a judicial inquiry, we all know how long the legal system takes. So that's to be expected. Our request is that they get to look at everything. Judicial inquiry, they can get whatever documents, call whatever witnesses they need, and we can get to the bottom of what exactly did go wrong, because all we've heard is just leaks from government sources, emails, and that. We don't know whether all the salacious details is true or not, and so the sooner it is found out, and the judicial inquiry can gather as much evidence as it can, then only will we know for sure. Otherwise, there'll just be these rumors and leaks going on.
It's a bit like inquiries that we have here in New Zealand as well, though, and I suppose it always goes the same with the inquiry, and certain things are not investigated, or the things that you know about already are investigated, and the outcome, you know, can be rather predictable with nothing useful. But we shall wait and see. It obviously is going to become more and more frustrating for people in Melbourne.
So I'll go through the coronavirus daily update in Victoria. I'll put it on the screen here. Yeah, so Victoria has recorded 428 new cases since yesterday. Total number of cases, that is, throughout the history of the pandemic, 5,165. Within Victoria, 57 new cases are linked to known outbreaks, and 370 are under investigation. That is also another key thing. The contact tracing is going really poorly at the moment. There were three.
This is actually something that came up in New Zealand as well. They claimed their contact tracing capability is quite high, but then when it came to crunch time, we saw the number of contacts that they're actually tracing are rather low. We simply had the advantage of having a very little community spread. Have there been any more deaths?
Yes, there's been 10 this week, but they've all been people in their 70s, 80s, and their 90s. So 32 people have died in Victoria, so it stood at 22 before the second wave. So 933 cases may indicate community transition. 2,462 cases are currently active in Victoria. 122 cases of coronavirus are in hospital, including 31 in intensive care. And that's those are the stats which are really freaking people out. Though you have to look at it, 122 out of 2,500, that's still, I'm just doing rough math here, still less than 1% of people who are infected with the coronavirus or in hospital.
So those numbers overall,
And more than 1.25 million tests have been processed, which even Daniel Andrews has said, now if you're going to test more people, you get more cases. And this is the really, I would say, not interesting, but telling statistic. Total number of healthcare workers who have been infected, 394 active cases, 150, the vast majority were acquired in the community. And obviously I've talked about the hotel quarantine, the fact that it was supposed to be a quarantine facility, yet the virus got out. And it seems to me if these health workers are getting infected, they're supposed to be managing the people who are sick, but they're getting more sick as well. And there's also 170 police officers in isolation because they've come into contact somebody with a confirmed case. So the people who are supposed to be treating the coronavirus and enforcing the lockdown are now getting sick with the coronavirus, which you have to ask the question. It seems that quarantine and enforcing the lockdown is actually exacerbating the property because you're bringing more bringing people more closer together.
Mm-hmm. And it's a case, at least one that hasn't been seen in other parts of Australia or New Zealand, where there is a huge rate of infection amongst frontline workers. But that was sort of speculated as well, is that, okay, well, you have since you have the people who are enforcing the lockdown, obviously other ones who are spreading, will end up spreading the virus further and further afield. So it certainly looks like the government incompetence in Melbourne especially is many magnitudes higher than it is anywhere else.
Bieber Anti-Bullying has said in the chat, if I were Tim, I'd be non-stop going through all the evidence that the BLM Black Lives Matter rally has caused the outbreak or the second wave. Yes, that was reported in The Australian this week, that two of the people who tested positive, who were at the Black Lives Matter rallies, lived in those public housing towers, which had to be locked down. Eight of the nine have been released from that hard lockdown, I guess you'd call it, using the New Zealand system, level five, which is total house arrest, Wuhan level five.
Yeah. Welding shut the doors. And that clearly, the entire reason we're discussing this now is because of the BLM protests that were allowed to happen. New Zealand got very, very lucky in that we had eradicated community spread just before these protests happened, and so there was very little chance of resurgence in New Zealand, which indeed was the case. And many states in Australia had it, reasonably well under control. And it was Melbourne that, with the protests, were successful in putting the virus front and center again.
And of course, there's still the cult of Dan on Twitter. The hashtag I stand with Dan. It sounds like they'd follow him all the way to the gulags, given their devotion. They're saying, oh no, they didn't acquire it at the rally and cause the outbreak. Mm-hmm. That hasn't been proved. You know, trying to sort of say, it didn't cause the outbreak, but it still proves the point that those people were completely irresponsible going to that rally, given, well, we don't know the contact tracing, so how can we know for sure?
any excuse will do. So yeah, it feels a little bit strange that we're still talking about coronavirus here after, you know, past the middle point of July already, since we'd been talking about this since very early on in the year. But here in New Zealand, the whole thing is old news. There's no more escapees, really. No, one of them has been imprisoned there. There was a press conference that was held by Jacinda 2 days ago it was either yesterday morning or the morning before, I believe, when she was sort of talking about, okay, if the virus comes back, then we're going to have, here's the plan, this is how we're going to react, and very little interest in it. And it seemed like she was trying to take the attention back from the real news that had taken place, which was that the National Party had replaced its leader, Todd Muller, who we'd been talking about the past few weeks, resigned suddenly and was replaced with Judith Collins. And that went front and center. And what was left of the sort of the coronavirus escapees, all of that faded away. And there's currently no ability to use that in to sort of take away the limelight. And so the focus has to be on the election, which is now nearly less than 2 months away. Yeah. And it looks like it's shaping up to be a good one, because the National Party selected the one person in their caucus who probably actually stands a chance against Jacinda. So the election very possibly is competitive again.
Now, describe what led to the downfall of Todd Muller, because he challenged Simon Bridges less than 2 months ago, and he's the shortest-serving party leader.
Most definitely in recent times, and I looked this up both for Labour and National. He's the shortest serving by quite a bit when it comes to those who didn't take over after a sudden death or resignation of a party leader. So essentially two or three other leaders were shorter, but they were all in these caretaker roles. And that's not what Muller was doing. He had actually rolled somebody. He had actually successfully conducted a coup against Simon Bridges, and he didn't last very, very long. There's still a lot to come out of that, what happened behind the scenes. What we do know for sure is he was very, very weak on the up against the media. Every single issue, he backed down. And so he was considered to be on the very much on the liberal wing of the National Party, and that he had sort of just wanted to, all of his stances were focused on sort of appeasing either journalists or the, you know, left-wing slants, which really angered his base. He was tanking in the polls. And then he stood down for health reasons. So he couldn't handle the toll that it took on him very, very quickly. He just wasn't ready for it. He wasn't ready. He had no idea what was in store for him, and he wasn't ready to fight back. And that's what resulted in his downfall.
Well, as the saying goes, if you can't handle the heat, get out of the kitchen. And that's what he did, made the right decision for the National Party and himself as well. Because did he actually announce his resignation on TV, or was it just a statement?
No, it was a statement that he issued before breakfast. You know, I'm trying to think back to when it was. Now it was a Monday or the Tuesday morning. And it was very, very swift. She was just gone. But the fact that he acknowledged this seems to have been factored in, because he's still on the eighth position in the caucus and the National Party rankings. So in eighth place means he's still on the front bench. Simon Bridges, who had been rolled, had a big promotion back to fourth place. So both of these former leaders are sitting on the front bench, and Judith Collins made a wise crack that, you know, this is the first time that there have been two former leaders sitting on the front bench of the party, and she wanted to show that was, everybody's behind her. The deputy was replaced as well with Jerry Brownlee.
Here's a photo of the pair there. Judith Collins is she's the blonde one in the what'd you call it the black and white dress with the the navy jacket, and Jerry Brownlee is the big fat gray haired guy.
Always a fat. He's large. We're going to
big.
Larger than life.
Jolly.
Yeah. He looks. He's got a bit of he's got a bit of meat to him. He's bulked out, and I believe he must come across like quite an imposing figure in real life. You'll see.
Judith Collins. When I first looked her up and heard her opening remarks, I liked what I was seeing. She's a political warrior. She's prepared to take up the fight to Saint Jacinta and the cult of Ardern, and sounded very Trumpian as well.
Yep.
So you can talk about her political career, because she's 20 years older than Jacinta. She's been around a while.
Yes, that's right. I'm going to try and quickly have a look here to double check her age if I can find it. So she's age 61. So. She's definitely not as young as Jacinta.
Does she have children?
That I actually don't know. Now that you mentioned, I'm just checking. So yeah, she is 20 years younger than Jacinta, and there's no. She's got one son listed here.
Yeah.
So
that's a good thing.
She definitely a bonus point there, and. She'd been in Parliament since 2008. She'd been there prior, but anyway, around that time, been there for a while. It must be longer. Trying to find somebody may know. Here we go. It was a different electorate. There we go. So Pakuranga, her current electorate, which is just down the road from me. She's had that since its formation in 2008, but she's actually been in Parliament since 2002. So, been there for nearly 20 years, so she's sort of most definitely considered to be a veteran of the party. She's very, very popular, especially with the more sort of the law and order, I'd say more conservative side, but she's socially liberal, which is why I was going to mention before, Jerry Brownlee is more of that social conservative.
She's also figure. Very free market libertarian as well.
Yeah, so on that side, she's definitely at least right wing, accepting of course the social issues, and very famous. Her nickname, of course, I see it in the chat there. I nearly forgot. She's known as Crusher Collins, and she was very famously as the police minister confiscated cars from boy racers and had them crushed. So if you were caught boy racing, I think on the second time, it's been a long time back, but it wasn't. Or it may have even been straight off the bat. It was considered to be a very, very aggressive, hardline law and order policy, and it upset a lot of the less law-abiding parts of the country. And as you might imagine, but obviously that's the kind of stuff that goes down really well with the National Party base. Yeah.
And she owns the nickname Crusher Collins. She was asked about it in her opening press conference with her new team there. Do you want to go through it?
The team of a press. I haven't.
Oh,
press.
I'll go through it because she was asked about her nickname Crusher Collins. She said, "Yes, we do intend to crush the government at the election." Jacinta, she's good at the politics, but poor on the execution. Basically, rubbished her.
Yeah,
which is.
She's willing to take the fight to anybody, and that's why she stands out. Why I said she is the one person in the National Party caucus who perhaps could actually beat Jacinta, and it's competitive again because she's willing to fight, and she'll take on journalists head on. She's every single interview has been good, and I always judge these leaders on their first day, and I remember looking at even. Met with Bill English on his first day as taking over from John Key, and I just looked at his interview on the first day, and I thought to myself, "Nah, this is rubbish." And indeed, he lost. He didn't quite make. He nearly did, but he lost. Simon Bridges, same thing. I thought, "Nah, it's the same, but worse than Bill English. He's not going to get there." Todd Muller had the same thing on his first day. MAGA hat incident. Everyone will remember that. It should be fresh in everybody's minds. And I thought, same thing. Day one, he's not going to make it. He doesn't have what it takes. And Judith Collins, you could see straight off the bat that she has what it takes.
And we'll have a look at, you sent me some photos of a first press conference. Obviously, you can tell that the pandemic is over.
This one's from the first, second press conference, actually, from earlier today. So this was the first actual policy announcement for the election.
No social distancing there, which shows that it's clearly not, level one, alert level one, as they call it, means that all social distancing has been removed. And this is, this was the press conference.
So that was
here.
The first press conference.
So obviously,
that's the entire caucus there behind her,
Well, without, the key thing with not having social distancing is that you're able to show as much unity as you can there. And it was actually a third tilt at the leadership, and colleagues probably thought she was a loose cannon, but when
And she's not, she sort of I've queried in the past, and she's not had a huge amount of support. At least the impression is she wasn't super well liked in the caucus. They didn't really want, they didn't think that she was a safe pick, which is why they went for the squishy picks. And she didn't even run against Bridges. She didn't actually run at that time. She didn't put her hand up. She basically said, look, if caucus asks me to do it, then I will come. And obviously, less than 2 months later, they basically were like, well, we can't have anybody else. So
yeah, we'd rather
we'll take you. And that was perfect for her. That's exactly what she was after, that they would ask her to lead.
Yeah, well, they need somebody to fire, and a loose cannon is the one most likely to land a blow,
to go off.
Especially with 2 months before the election.
Absolutely the case. So.
We've got a super chat in the Unshackled live chat. As always in Trad Tasman Talk, we multi-stream to both the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel. This is from Senator Slayer for $2.99 Australian. Says, congratulations to Blair Cottrell and Lauren Southern having a baby. Yes, because
we were going to talk about this later, but you're going to have to jump into it now.
Yeah, we'll jump into it now.
If you do want to send any super chats, send them through now. If you're watching on my channel, you're going to have to jump across to Tim's channel for any super chats to read out.
Yeah.
If you do ask a good enough or make a good enough comment in my chat, sometimes I'll read it out. But if you want a guaranteed comment to be read out, head over there. And thank you very much to those super chats.
So this is an Instagram, Lauren Churley. She says, I'm proud to say my son and my husband are Australian. I've kept it under wraps the last while to enjoy our privacy, like many details about my family. However, as my life is merged more with this nation, it's impossible not to share. So this is where the speculation comes from. Yeah. During her Australian tour, there was a photo she posed for with Blair Cottrell doing the OK sign. And so
I do remember that. That was the first thing that came to my mind too when I saw, she's been hiding away in Australia this whole time. That's quite cool. And I was like, I wonder who the lucky Australian is. I'll have to ask Tim.
I know
so
nothing.
Those rumors will only get worse.
She also wrote a op-ed for the Spectator Australia on her, I guess her coming out as an Aussie.
I was going to say, that's definitely what it is. She's coming out as Australian.
Spectator Australia, keep the theatre of cancel culture off the Australian political stage, because we're still dealing with the hangover from Black Lives Matter 2.0 and cancel culture. And it says down here that she's going to be on Sky News Outsiders on Sunday morning with Rowan Dean, James Morrow, and Rita Panahi. So she'll have more to...
She's going to replace Pauline Hanson.
Well, the thing is, I'm curious how she sort of, because there was a bit of a grey area when she was coming to Australia, whether a visa would get approved, which it eventually did. She was the last.
She got in on one of those 90-day fiancé visas.
Yeah, I'm just wondering sort of how she snuck in and there was sort of no attention. Maybe just Peter Dutton, Home Affairs Minister, just did it quietly there. Because, of course, after she and Stefan Molyneux, who's now been banned from YouTube for hate speech, there's a whole bunch of other people who've been banned this week, including Australia's own Max Egan. Gavin McGuinness and Marlene Opulis's tour, that didn't go ahead after hers because their visas got denied. I just wonder sort of the Twitter left reaction is like, what? This was right under
the thing
our...
is, yeah. What I would put this down to is that the visas are not that hard to get as long as you don't have a criminal record. But if it's publicized, then the opposition is created, and that's how they would thrive there, as kind of being controversial, right? And that's how you'd get into the news, get into the media, and you'd sell more tickets, which is not a terrible way, terrible way to go about getting attention. But the point is that does make it more difficult to get the visas. It makes it inherent.
Yeah,
it creates that inherent resistance.
And so again, quietly. Love.
Yeah, she exactly. That was it. She came there to get married, and that is likely why it was rather straightforward for her to come in. That's about my two cents. And as well, on her video, she announced recently as well she was kind of going to come back in and make more documentaries, which I actually think would be
although
nice.
She did sort of walk away from some of her previous position, tried to claim that she's a centrist now.
And... more centrist. I watched the video. I don't think it's quite as bad as people were making it out to be, in that I think she was more saying that she's going to go away from being openly provocative, like too provocative, and just wanted to be, you know, look at issues. We'll see what actually happens when she makes more content. I think that's where we should reserve judgment for.
In that regard.
She should know as good as anybody that there's no forgiveness with the left.
So no,
really
they already have
if
made
she really
clear
does think that
they're not forgiving
a
her.
Centrist, if she really genuinely thinks she's going to become a centrist, then she is totally delusional. I think we should give her just a little bit more credit than that.
Well, she's going to be, obviously, well, in Australia for the foreseeable future. I mean, she can't leave now. She's obviously settled in here with her new family. The borders, not even the state borders are open.
If she's in
the
right state, she might finally be able to come to New Zealand when the bubbles start to open up.
I'll put the photo back up again to see if we have... anyone can recognize sort of the backdrop
there.
any travel sports.
Yeah, can somebody recognize that tree in the background? And I'm sure there are people who are going to be doing it. So we shall see. Anyway, one of the things as well is that, you know, she's got it. She's obviously married now. She's got her child. She is going to be probably more sensible now, because that's usually what happens. You realize, you start to think and plan a little bit about more about the future, and you're less focused on living in the moment. And so maybe she'll, who knows? I don't really want to make a comment either way, because then someone's going to come and tell me I was wrong when it all goes down in flames. But you know, I'm at least interested enough to see what happens.
Well, you were denied the pleasure of seeing her in New Zealand was it the venue, the Powerhouse, was it?
Yes, that was the one last. And obviously it was Auckland Council venues before that. I actually made it onto the news recently. I was actually introduced as my claim to fame was that I tried to find a venue for an alternative venue for Lauren Southern. So that's kind of my New Zealand claim to fame.
compared to what they say about you at the moment, that's a pretty sort of...
Well, that was in there recently, but yeah, obviously, the recent report was far more flattering to me than ever has been in the past. So who knows?
There's
strange,
countless
strange world, strange election
exposés written about you these days.
Yeah, exactly. So interesting. And actually, I wasn't actually the one who found who had anything to do with the venue in the end. Right? I made a couple of phone calls. Yeah, and I'm actually. Yeah, you look back and you wonder, especially if you've read, those of you who have read that long article that Milo wrote exposing the guy that she was working with.
Caelan Robertson boyfriend, George Llewellyn-John.
Yeah, it was them. And you sort of, and you're like, oh, okay, some things start to make more sense knowing that they were the bad guys. They were playing both sides the whole time. And
I'll say they used to work for Rebel Media as well, as it was known back then. And when Kalen quit, there was a very public back and forth between he and Ezra. And I tended to take Ezra's side of things, his version of events, that he was being blackmailed, was more believable.
And that ended up being the correct one. That ended up being completely right after, Milo Yiannopoulos ended up exposing the rest of it. So that was very interesting. And I think, it was great for Ezra to be vindicated as well.
Yeah.
He's done pretty well since then, I think.
Yeah, well, he's slimmed it back now. It's just focused on Canadian politics now, and it's rebranded Rebel News. He has Sheila Gunn-Reid, Keaton Baxter, and David the Menzoid Menzies doing the roving reports and getting arrested by Trudeau's
getting arrested,
goons.
That seems to be it. Yeah, getting arrested by the Dragoons. And that's, or rather the Mounties in Canada. Anyway, that's the way it is.
Yeah, if Lauren's in Victoria, then it's kind of turning into... It's already a mini Canada. It's on the path to be a mini China now.
Yeah. Good. I've got a couple of people in my chat pointing to a couple more Judith Collins video. Some more comments about her and policy, which I was going to cover anyway before we had that super chat.
We'll go back.
Distraction.
Yeah.
About Lauren Southern, and it was something we were going to talk about anyway, so it was a good little tangent. Mm. I've got somebody asking about policies, etc. And one of those photos that you saw of her earlier, of her policy announcements, that was announcing the infrastructure development investment that she has promised. It was a $31 billion package, so the largest infrastructure package probably ever announced or promised in New Zealand. I say announced because, she'd have to win the election to actually implement it. It is over the next 10 years, and the idea around financing it is actually to change it to an intergenerational structure, so to allow the transport agency to borrow $1 billion every year until they've, they can borrow $4 billion or something along those lines, and then service that debt with their income, and basically the future generations that use the infrastructure should be paying for it. That's kind of the idea she has. Not 100% sure if I like that. Not that it really matters, because I'm not a National Party supporter anyway. But at least it makes the numbers work out, and it lets her promise something huge. And she has basically promised to squash Auckland congestion. And at the end of the day, that the only way that you're going to deal with congestion issues is you have to front load a huge amount of infrastructure. So if there ever has been a plan to get to the end of, to actually fix transport problems, it is a case of essentially overinvesting. You need to go beyond what's simply needed to fix the problems. You have to future-proof them. And the entire lack of that we've had in Auckland around infrastructure, which it came up in the last show or the show before that, with the so-called drought that we're having, which is actually just the fact that, Auckland grows and uses more water, and we haven't bothered to increase our water storage capabilities in forever. That may be a winner, who knows? But at the very least, she's thinking very, very seriously about, how she can compete with Jacinda. And that's something that her predecessors couldn't do, because Jacinda would get out there and wave, she could throw tens of billions of dollars around in promises. And Judith Collins is actually coming up with far more concrete plans incredibly quickly.
So MAGA 2020 New Zealand is back on track. Make Ardern go away.
Go away. It's definitely a possibility. Before this week, I would have said it's not happening. Now I can say, there is a very real possibility that, the center, slightly left of the slightly center right can cobble together enough seats to take the take the majority. It's very, very real possibility now.
And of course, the most interesting aspect of the leadership change to the Australian media is that New Zealand is going to have its second woman versus woman general election, the other being 1999 between National Jenny Shipley, who was the incumbent, and Labor's Helen Clark, who won that election, became Prime Minister for 9 years. And Julie Gillard was banging on this week about women in leadership and praised New Zealand for having, was that three female prime ministers? Yes. What is it with New Zealand and women? From my perspective, is you've had good female leaders, and well, there's one, of course, who wasn't prime minister, but was a very influential finance minister, Ruth Richardson, in the early 90s, who cut welfare and reformed industrial relations. Finance ministers like the treasurer in Australia. It was an extremely a radical, revolutionary period for New Zealand. She was only in the job 3 years, but she secured New Zealand's 1990s and 2000s prosperity.
I'm afraid I can't really answer that question in that why New Zealand seems to have lots of high caliber women in politics. Other than perhaps New Zealand has always been very much focused on egalitarianism. It is a very early women's suffrage in New Zealand, and a lot of equality in the political sense is something that's sort of part of New Zealand's fabric and has been for a very, very long time. But whether that actually answers the question, I don't know.
And it still remains to be seen whether MAGA 2020 and the US can get back on track, because Trump finally wearing a face mask, or it was a POTUS mask. He got one especially.
Yeah, he got a special Trump mask.
Was seen,
and it was to a hospital apparently.
Yeah, but it was seen as a sign of capitulation.
And basically, that was the thing. The image doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so you could try and justify it all you want, but in the end, it was the fact that he had been arguing against masks for a very long time, and then he sort of gave up. And he's just replaced his campaign manager. Approval rating's not looking too good. It's basically a case where the people around him hate his base. The people around him hate his voters, and he's stumbling at the moment, definitely.
And Biden is still as awful as ever. But the thing is about the US, as we've seen over the past year, demographically, Republicans are doomed, and the remaining whites, especially the millennials, they're creating communist nations like Chaz and Chop.
Exactly. It's a strange country. Sometimes it feels like, sometimes it is just a collection of 50 different countries. And even the power of the president seems to be very muted. You think if anybody could break through and drain the swamp, it would have been Trump, but he seems to have been largely thwarted in many of his goals. The thing about Biden is you think, Biden's a useless candidate, but in the back of their mind, everybody knows that Biden's not going to be president in terms of power, right? You know that the guy's not going to be calling the shots. And so they know that the entrenched political establishment, the progressives, they know that those people are going to be working behind the scenes to control
because
the
they all
levers of power.
The
candidate becomes largely irrelevant.
Yeah, because the squad led by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar, they all won their primaries, and there's more of these Democratic Socialists of America style candidates who'll come in the general as well.
So it's almost impossible at this point to make predictions, and even you could see in the New Zealand election, if I had made any predictions last week, they would have been irrelevant this week. So a week becomes an incredibly long time in politics, and a week ago MAGA 2020 New Zealand was not going to happen, but this week it could. This week MAGA 2020 America might not happen, but maybe next week everything will have changed.
Well, we've got our biggest election of the year is the Queensland state election, also between two women, Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk and LNP opposition leader Deb Frecklington. And the wall has is turning into a campaign issue in Queensland.
We're going to unbuild it.
Well, Anastasia Palaszczuk back in, I think it was April, closed the Queensland-New South Wales border to stop the spread of the coronavirus, and the LNP had been campaigning to bring down the border. LNP Federal Senator Amanda Stoker, she made an unfortunate reference to Anastasia Palaszczuk being the knee on the throat of the Queensland economy, choking it. But with this second wave in Victoria, Anastasia Palaszczuk, she for about a couple of days, she was like, I don't want to say I told you so, but yeah, I told you so.
Yeah.
And so she's her political gamble has paid off. And now she's going to be putting up a 700 meter wall to help keep the southerners out. There was apparently a Victorian man who tried to enter three times into Queensland now, so keeping out the southerners and especially those Victorian Mexicans. And New South Wales is also dealing with in Sydney some outbreaks at hospitality places, the Crossroads hotel cluster in southwest Sydney. That's been the worst so far. It came from a Melburnian truckie who, according to the New South Wales health minister, had the biggest viral load he'd seen. And this is something that's different about the second wave, that people are showing symptoms quicker. And so there's been a crackdown on hospitality in New South Wales. New rules are coming in on July the 24th. And at weddings, there's Gladys Berejiklian said, no singing, no dancing, no mingling.
Yep.
Yeah, so there'll be no feet loose in New South Wales for a while.
Right. That's back to shutting down bars and the clubs and the all important nightlife struck again by coronavirus. And I mean, it's interesting because last week I did refer to the South Korean situation, where I said, these seem to be the environments, these seem to be the types of people it spreads most rapidly amongst, and indeed that's the case. Well, now in New South Wales. And the weather, and obviously being spread by the Melbournians attempting to escape the confines of their state prison.
In Queensland, they have reopened the nightclubs, but dancing still banned. A few venues got fined for dancing happening on the dance floor. And Western Australia, that was going to go to stage 5 of COVID safe, because there were initially 3 stages for COVID safe Australia. They invented their own. They're on stage 4 at the moment, but they delayed stage 5 because of the Victorian outbreak. They've got their Western Derby this weekend between Perth and Fremantle in the AFL. An AFL game between two Melbourne clubs was played there last night, Collingwood and Geelong, because there's no AFL in Melbourne anymore because of the second wave. They were at the Collingwood Geelong game last night. There was a streaker on the field. It was just naked on the top, not the bottom. But it was not. It was considered a quarantine breach.
Of course. No, an entire new issue now with streakers at games, because they do have the audiences, but they're isolating the teams, right? Is that sort of
And they get tested like nearly every day.
Yeah, I find it quite fascinating how the sports must go on as sort of
Scott Morrison a symbolic situation. Announced today on the Gold Coast an investment in the film industry up there, because that's where Movie World Studio is, which sort of a lot of people are thinking, oh, we want Hollywood, people to come over from Hollywood to make, because you remember that it was Tom Hanks who was making a movie on the Gold Coast. He got the coronavirus. But yeah. I suppose with sport and movies, we've got to watch something if us normal folk are in lockdown.
You got to be welded into your house and you got to keep the TV on and watch the sport.
Mm.
Yeah. Very good. Well, we have another non-COVID situation in New Zealand as well, where the Serious Fraud Office, which we've mentioned many times on the show.
Super serious fraud office.
Because very serious fraud going on. And only when it's serious does it get investigated. And the latest investigation now is the Labour Party. So I've had various investigations into the National Party, Jamie Lee Ross, who's one of my opponents at the local election, who's just registered his own party called Advance New Zealand. And New Zealand First, of course, dealing with several investigations as well. And so now it's the Labour Party, and this is for donations that were made during the 2017 election, and they sold some artwork, and the artwork went for, I'm going to say, it was $20,000. So they had some artwork that was sold for $20,000 at a Labour Party function, but these they were only worth about 10% of a cost. They're only worth just over $2,000 under normal circumstances, and so that should have been counted as a donation. The difference in the value should have been registered lodged separately, and because it was over the $15,000 limit, a donor name would have had to be filed, and that seems to be the sort of starting point for this investigation into the Labour Party's finances at the moment. And we shall see. None of the serious fraud investigations have come back yet, so we will see if there's any judgment passed on New Zealand First or National or Labour or Advance, which is Jamie Lee Ross's party, before the election, which is now, like I said already, is basically 2 months away.
Oh, well, we've had just broken today fraud charges laid related to the political arena. Mining magnate Clive Palmer, who first ran the Palmer United Party in 2013, where mm-hmm. he won the federal seat of Fairfax and won three senators, then tried to run again for the Senate in 2019 with his United Australia Party. He spent close to $80 million in 2019 on ads, which were on every ad break. So he's been charged with fraud and directors breaches by ASIC, the corporate regulator, for fraudulent and dishonest use of his position as a company director to funnel more than $12 million into his party's 2013 election campaign. So it's taken a while for the Australian Securities and Investment Commission yep. To catch up with him. But he does face five years in jail. Maximum fine is $340,000, and
that's jump change for him.
Well, that's why I'm hoping that he goes to jail, and I'm not the only one who is of that view, that it's about time that things caught up with him, because when he was out of Parliament after 2016, his nickel refinery in North Queensland went into administration. His workers' entitlements were not paid. And also another fun fact, he was trying to, I'm not sure if he's still trying to sue one of Australia's lefty political YouTubers, Friendly Geordies, for calling him, Friendly Geordies called Clive Fatty McFuckhead.
And the fact that he's able to pour like $80 million into an election and still lose, but then also at the same time not live up to any of his other obligations is You know, it's there's not really much to be said other than that some people genuinely do have too much money and don't really know what to do with it.
You wonder sort of how he got there in the first place. Give it, well, he comes out. He once accused Rupert Murdoch's ex-wife Wendy Deng of being a Chinese spy. That was one of his more out there statements. But
we shall see. I'm sure that you'll report back when this eventually goes through court and the charges are processed, and you know, depending on the current rate of the court system, we may find out in maybe a year or two.
Yeah, or we wonder whether because when he was facing court over the nickel refinery, he carried a sick bag with him, which one of our most infamous failed company directors, Christopher Skase, his company Quintex, he fled to the Caribbean and claimed he was too sick to face charges. You wonder sort of based on those, Clive will just be like, I'm too sick to face trial.
Coronavirus.
Yeah, just cough in the courtroom and you'll get a reprieve.
How bizarre. We have got a super chat here. I see in your channel from L late Upsy.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if there's any better way to say that, but he hasn't left a comment other than dot dot.
Yeah, but it's for New Zealand, $16.99.
So if you have got a comment, we'll try and find it somewhere if you do want to make it. But I don't know, the dot dot seems intentional, so I'm assuming there was no intention to have a comment there. And I'm your favorite issue has come up again in the super chats as well. I'm sure you want to read that one out.
Kieran Paldrill has said lockdown is the perfect time to grow that beard. Well, I don't think I've talked yet much about the mask mandate mania that's sweeping Melbourne at the moment, because the health advice is that if you can't socially distance, it's advised to wear a mask. And we've seen the media run with it. A lot of pressure on people to wear masks, and I have sensitive enough skin as it is, and I'm just thinking if I'm forced to wear a mask, a beard's just going to make that worse. Have you worn a mask before?
Yeah, I've tried other masks with the beard. The beard becomes an extension of the filtering system, so it's quite effective. No, they recommend And as a requirement in some places, people have to do a mask because they have to be clean shaven, because it doesn't work. Which is why I initially, when the mask thing came out months ago, I made a joke that it was a feminist plot to remove, you know, to get rid of beards. So the whole coronavirus situation is just there to try and get rid of beards, so that everyone has to be clean shaven and wear a mask. But that was just a joke. I'm not sure if it will be by the time this is all over, but it has been a joke.
Well, because that's one of the speculative things about the hypothetical stage 4 in Victoria, that masks will become mandatory. And I've spoken about, thankfully, yet we haven't seen, as we see in the US with the masks, the hysterical pro-mask Karens and the hysterical anti-mask Karens at supermarkets and other places.
Battle it out. Well, this should just about bring the show to a close.
Yep, got one more super chat.
Yes.
From Clarky, who's a very regular super chatter, 20 New Zealand dollars. Thank you very much. Flick this to Dewey and family, please, Tim. Always appreciate the weekly dose of sanity. Well, we're very pleased to hear that feedback.
And thank you very much as well. And I could put my little plug in here. When I'm not too busy to write, I do write rightminds.nz, and you can actually go to rightminds.nz/donate to support the website and the stuff that I do, and you know, my wonderful legal activities, which you know, the court systems are pretty clogged at the moment, but hopefully we will get some progress there with regards to my case against the police. And that's pretty much it for me at this point. I'm obviously trying to do a bit of campaigning and fit everything in, and it's nice to just take an hour off in, you know, on a Friday evening and just talk about what's happened this week with Tim. I enjoy it, and thank you everyone who watches the show. It's really good to have you guys and read all of the comments.
It's basically now with the second lockdown, just to check in on me now. How you doing?
Yeah, basically, yeah, a sanity check for Tim as well.
Because we'll see where we are next week. Because yeah, it just there's just no hope in Melburnians at the moment. Because the lockdown is going into at least August the 19th, but we're just seeing the cases rise and rise. So it's just, sort of like, why bother getting out of bed in the morning? You can't go anywhere. Yeah, like I said, very demoralized at the moment.
Should pick up some other hobbies, you know, maybe gardening. I don't know if you've got any space in your garden, but that's always good fun. You know, reading some more books.
Yeah, because we haven't had a book ban here.
Yeah, that's right. You can still go and buy books from the store. You didn't quite go full New Zealand and close the bookstores.
Still got KFC as well.
Ah, there you go. So you're still doing much better than we were doing.
There was another KFC fine handed out this week because a person who refused to not dine in at KFC. They were given a warning but didn't leave, and so they got fined.
Of all things to breach lockdown rules, is just the things that people choose to do boggle my mind. Amy's just made a good suggestion here. I'm going to read that one out. She says Tim can bake. There you go, there's a new hobby suggestion for you. Next week you can show us some of the baking that you've done.
I'll think of some things. But yeah, the Unshackled, there's still a lot of non-corona news that I can write about, such as this week I wrote about Ghislaine Maxwell's appearance before the court, not guilty plea, because I just can't watch Dan Andrews anymore and his lecturing and hectoring. Oh, I might have to, you know, go even further and the media hysteria, and yeah, it's just, like, I know that this is my job to do this, but it's only so much you can take.
Very good. And yes, I'll let you do any further wrap up. Somebody is in the chat is actually asking about me and the police, which I suppose just assume everybody knows. But back in January, the police tried to raid my house. Well, they did raid my house, trying to claim that they suspected I had illegal firearms, which I didn't. And they left empty handed. And so I have since taken up a civil case to sue them for trespass. And that's the case that is slowly, ever so slowly progressing, and we'll hopefully have an update on that in a couple of weeks. But I don't know, yeah, you know, it's everything is delayed at the moment.
I'll be back on Monday evening, 7 p.m. Melbourne time for Wilmsfront. Mondays and Wednesdays, 7 p.m. on YouTube and DLive Melbourne time, and of course keep checking out the unshackled.net. on a regular basis for all the latest Unshackled productions and news and essays.
We'll see you all next week at the hopefully the usual time again.
Yeah, stay safe, not just from the coronavirus, but from government tyranny and media hysteria as well. I should add as well.
Absolutely, stay safe, stay free,
stay sane.